The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
What is up? It's the Hoop Ball Clippers podcast. Brandon Marcus here, coming to you on a Tuesday morning, taping this one at 10:25. And I'm telling you the exact time, just in case a trade goes down between the time that this podcast is recorded and the time that it is posted. We're going to have Andrew Greif of the LA Times on today's podcast. He's been on twice before, so we'll make it three times today. We're going to chat about yesterday's win over the San Antonio Spurs, talk about the game a little bit more in depth, possibly what's going on with Zoo and Harrell, whether Harrell's going to get traded, whether the Clippers are going to make a deal. Apparently, there are some rumors that the Clippers want to get rid of that first-round pick that they have this year because, frankly, after this first-round pick, they don't have one for a long time because of that trade with Oklahoma City. So we'll talk to Andrew about what trades the Clippers might make and talk to him about how the team is doing in general. We appreciate you joining us. This podcast, don't forget, like all our shows, is brought to you by our title sponsor, Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee Company. Check out their website at HawaiianIsles.com, on Amazon by searching for Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee, or on Twitter at High Kona Coffee. And of course, this podcast, you know what this podcast is, right? It's all about the Clippers. Well, what if you want to bet on the Clippers? What if you thought yesterday's line of 9 or 9.5 was a little bit too high? The Clippers coming off a big win against the Timberwolves. Maybe they don't blow them out. Let's take those 9 points. Hey, where can I bet, though? I know a place you can bet. How about mybookie.ag? Incredible site. You can use the promo code today. That's the word today. And MyBookie will give you a 50% deposit bonus up to $1,000. You heard me. A 50% deposit bonus up to $1,000. Head there now. That's mybookie.ag. The promo code is the word today. You can bet on basketball. You can bet on baseball once that season starts up. Hell, I bet you they have the XFL. That's about to start up this weekend. Of course, there's golf, there's Premier League. Apparently, there might be blackjack and poker as well. So go ahead, go to mybookie.ag. Tell them we sent you. And you know what? You know what you're going to do? You might get a couple of dollars out of it. So go ahead, mybookie.ag. And I hope you enjoy it. Now, the Clippers. A good win last night. A really good win last night. And frankly, one that I think they needed. I was concerned early on with the way the team was playing. They weren't defending great at times. They allowed Patty Mills to get open a few too many times. Frankly, they got lucky at the end of the game when Patty Mills was wide open for a three that he happened to miss. PG was really good when he needed to be. At the end of that game, PG and Kawhi took over, and you can see why the Clippers are so good with those two on the floor. I mean, they were really impressive. Kawhi had 22 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, was efficient, 8 of 17, only played 32 minutes, so it's not like he played a ton of minutes. PG played 31, and he had 19-12 with 8 assists. Trez, a 7 of 11 in about 25 minutes, 14 points. This was actually an interesting game because Trez played 25 and Zoo played 23, and Zoo played really good defense on LaMarcus Aldridge. And it was interesting because at the end of the game, you're wondering why Zoo wasn't in when he was the one that was slowing down LaMarcus Aldridge. And I think LaMarcus had something around 11 points or something in the fourth quarter, and they still weren't bringing in Zoo. They were going with Trez because of the offense. Now, what's interesting about that is you've heard my rant about Zoo and how he doesn't get enough playing time. He's very good defensively, and especially when you have Kawhi and PG on the floor together, you don't need the offense as much in Trez. But what was interesting is that now there might be some rumors about the Clippers wanting to bring somebody in to get some rebounding late. So I don't know if A, they trust Zoo, or B, they trust Trez. I think they want somebody that has that offense and defense. Trez obviously is great offensively. Zoo's good offensively, not great, and he's pretty good defensively. So I'm curious to see what they do. Tristan Thompson apparently is a name that they might consider. It will be interesting. Also of note, in yesterday's game, Landry Shamet played some of the last minute or two in place of Lou Williams. So that's something we discussed before the season started. When you have all that offense, maybe you want to bring in more defense. And instead of bringing in Zoo over Harrell, they brought in Shamet over Lou Williams. So we'll talk to Andrew Greif about that and see what he thinks. So without further ado, let's get into our conversation with Andrew Greif. You read him on the LA Times website. You read him in the print edition of the LA Times. He is the Clippers beat writer. He's joining us for the third time on the Hoop Ball Clippers podcast. Andrew Greif. Andrew, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Any news? Any updates? Are the Clippers trading anybody? Is Montrezl Harrell still on the Los Angeles Clippers?
He is. It is Tuesday morning. He is still on the Clippers. This front office is famous for working very stealthily, and this is no difference. This trade deadline, it's almost 365 days exactly since they, kind of shocked everyone, traded Tobias Harris in the dead of the night, only a couple hours after he hit a game-winning shot. My sense is that they are very active, lots of conversations happening, but it hasn't really amounted to much yet. This is a deadline league. You hear that all the time, but I think that really does apply to the Clippers because I'm not sure they need a game-changing move. I think they're looking to upgrade in some areas, but they really like their team as currently constituted. But I think it's going to take up until that noon Pacific deadline Thursday, really, before they decide to pull a trigger.
There are a lot of names being floated around. I mean, you could look at the bigs like Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson. You can see the wings like Robert Covington. The one thing that's interesting is apparently the Clippers, they have that first-round pick this year. And I don't think they have one for a while after this year. So it seems like they're pretty Correct. Motivated to get rid of that first-round pick in a deal. Now, the question is for who? Because I think that they would hold on if it was for somebody like Iguodala. It just wouldn't make sense to me at all to give up a pick like that, even if it's going to be late in the first round for a guy in Andre Iguodala that I don't think changes your team that much. I mean, sure, he's an upgrade over Harkless, but he also hasn't played basketball all year. So what type of player do you envision them going after? Because what's been interesting to see, and you can just have to look at yesterday's game, where at the end of the game, it was mostly Harrell. Zoo did a great job against Aldridge. He showed that he's very good defensively, but Doc clearly doesn't trust him enough late in games to go to him, and they still stick with Harrell. So it seems like they want a big maybe that they trust that can do something on offense and defense, but that's hard to find. And then you see that Lou Williams got benched in the last minute or two for Landry Shamet. So it seems like they're more comfortable in the guard situation because they have someone they can go to offensively versus defensively, but maybe the bigs and the forward position is what's an issue right now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that the same kind of holes that we thought of in September as maybe areas to upgrade have pretty much held true. I think that the front court, the bigs, their comfort with Zubac versus Harrell, who's obviously extremely valuable, but he's also 6'7". And, last night you saw against Jakob Poeltl, it was not a matchup that Philly favored Harrell very often. So I think the adding size is something that is still a priority there. Think about in September, the Clippers were going to have or were working to have Joakim Noah in for a workout, but it just didn't work out. I think Noah kind of had a little bit of a setback with his health, and so it just didn't happen. But that's been something they've thought about for a while of, is there a way to upgrade the bigs? I think that the playmaking point guard was something that has been talked about a lot pretty much ever since they traded Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think they're a little more comfortable there. I think that if you had to rank kind of their areas that they'd like to upgrade, it would probably, in my sense, it might be like third behind like a big and kind of a stretchy big who could almost like play like Harkless, maybe score a little easier, like a Marcus Morris type of guy. So I think that right now, because of the offense they run, and Doc has said this the last couple games, that he doesn't want the ball in one player's hands initiating the offense. So I think they probably believe they could get by without that quote-unquote true pure ball handler. Kawhi's obviously his passing has improved dramatically this season. Paul George has been a pretty decent facilitator. I think you're seeing the secondary ball handlers do a pretty decent job. So I do think that if they're looking for somewhere, it would probably have to be what do we do with Mo Harkless's contract because it's, expiring. It's about $11 million. You have that first-round pick. Those are both pretty good assets. And then you have some salary filler down the lineup. They have some pieces. And I agree with you. I just don't know if Iguodala is someone that maybe changes the dynamic of the team so much that it's worth going after him and parting with some assets.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, there's a lot to unpack from what you just said. Now, here's my biggest question. From the people that you've talked to, do you get a sense that Trez really is on the block? I mean, would it take an astronomical offer to pry him off their hands? Because the interesting thing with him is that it seems like Doc likes playing him late in games. He's instant offense off the bench. He seems like the chemistry with him on the floor and him in the locker room. I know there's been some stuff that's come out about how he gets upset at times and he may have some mood swings, but it seems like the guys really like him. Do you anticipate them dealing him? Because it seems like if they do trade him, then it would take another month or two to incorporate everybody and get that chemistry that the Clippers have frankly been lacking, and they need the time to get all these pieces together. They need the time to have Kawhi and PG and Lou and Trez on the floor together, and they're just starting to get that, and I kind of feel like they'd have to start from square one.
Yeah, the short answer is I don't have a concrete feel for their willingness to trade Montrezl Harrell. I think that early on this season, my sense was that, you know, this team is all in and to win a title. And Trez is a big part of that. Yes, he has his weaknesses. But like you said, his points, his energy, he kind of punches above his weight in terms of what he can do against bigger players. And along with Lou Williams and Pat Beverly, I mean, those three guys are kind of the heart of this team. And so I think it would be a little bit gutting to trade him. I think that you'd have to think the players would somewhat understand, you know, hey, he's going to be a free agent. Do we want to pay him? If that's the reason why, they would make a move. But I just think he's really valuable to the team in ways that go beyond his stats in a way. I think that some of his toughness rubs off. Yes, you know, he's a guy who can swing from one way to the next, but that's him. I mean, this is a guy who's worked himself from a guy who was, you know, said to be nearly waived by the Clippers before he even got to his first training camp with the team into one of the most vital players on the team. So he feels very strongly in his play and his confidence level. And so I think you're expecting someone who comes off the bench and is expecting to put up 20 and 10 every night. So I think that the contract thing is definitely a question. I don't have a great feel for, you know, do you try to seek value for him? Can you really upgrade? What kind of value can you get for him in this free agency market? You know, maybe it'll be a little depressed. Maybe you can re-sign him for a little cheaper than people expected 5 months ago. That's a fascinating question. The Trez question is something that, until it's noon, until it's like 12:05 on Thursday, it's going to consume my thoughts.
Yeah, you wonder, because you would think that the Clippers would have already talked to Trez a little bit to try and get the amount that he would want, just so they have an idea. I don't know what the legality of doing that is, but if he's going to command a ton of money, there's a certain line that you kind of have to deal with, because on one side, you want to win the title now, and Trez is an important part of doing that. On the other side, you don't want to lose him for nothing and not be able to get an asset in return. So if you can get a guy maybe like Robert Covington and Gorgui Dieng, I don't know how difficult that's going to be, then you might want to pull the trigger if you're not going to pay Trez. That's going to be the interesting thing, because here's the other question for you, Andrew. Does Doc trust Zoo? Because they spent all of this time and energy into sending people over to work with him during the offseason. They got his hands better. He showed that he's good defensively. He's an important part of what they do in the first quarter in getting offensive rebounds and getting rebounds in general and getting buckets. Does Doc trust him?
Well, I mean, I think you just have to look at his patterns of how he plays and when he plays. You know, what happens is Zoo starts, comes back in the second quarter, usually with Kawhi, to close the first half, opens the second half usually for 5 or 6 minutes, gets to about 19 minutes a game, and then typically it's Harrell who has finished the game. Sometimes, you know, 14 straight minutes or 17 straight minutes. That's not uncommon. We saw that a lot. And I think that Doc does really like what Zoo does, but I don't think that he trusts him in a way that is going to supersede the way he considers his substitution patterns in the fourth quarter. You know, I think he really trusts Trez's consistency. And that's not to say Zoo isn't, but Trez is just has shown he's been with Doc longer, and I think he's earned Doc's trust in terms of you know, being able to punch above his weight again with bigger players, scoring. So I think there's a little more trust with him and what he's going to bring. And Doc really, every time I talk to Doc, he talks about how good Zoo is and how valuable he is. Even last night, Kawhi and PG were talking about how, you know, Zoo, his screens are just different than Trez because he's a bigger target. It makes him a little easier sometimes to lose your defender on going around, whereas Trez is more valuable going to the hoop because a big will stick with him instead of trying to trap the ball handler because they have to respect Trez's rolling ability. So it seems like Trez is that guy, is that closer, for better or worse. You know, Zoo has played pretty well at times this year, and yet it still really hasn't budged the Clippers' approach to playing in the fourth quarter with their center. So I think that, yeah, Trez right now absolutely has all the trust from Doc.
That's what makes me think that he's not going to get traded, because if you have somebody that you trust late in the game, it seems like you'd really have to have something that blew you over and that you absolutely thought would make your team leaps and bounds better. Because if you're about to take out your starting or your center that finishes games, then you got to trust what's coming in. And the interesting thing with Zoo is that you saw yesterday in that game that Aldridge couldn't be stopped when Trez was on the floor, and that he was stopped when Zoo was on the floor. And so you thought the logical thing would be to bring in Zoo at the end of the game because you already have guys that can score in PG and Kawhi. I understand when PG and Kawhi are sitting, you need Trez's offense. But what we discussed in the offseason was who's going to close, and are they going to have some defensive assets on the floor when they have Kawhi and PG already on the floor? Because they are the guys that are going to score offensively, and you bring in guys like Lou, you have Trez. You only need probably three of those guys at most, and you need the other guys to be defensive, which was smart, which is why it was smart that Trez stayed in while Lou went out and Shamet came in at the end of that game. So the real question is, does offense or defense matter at the end of the game? Because we're seeing with the Clippers that it seems like for Doc, he's more afraid of his team scoring points at the end of the game, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think that, you know, last night, I think we feel like we've asked Doc a couple different ways about, you know, the ways he chooses to use those bigs late in games. And I think it just comes back to trust. You know, Trez has been a producer, consistent producer for the last two seasons, especially. And so right now, I think he's the guy that Doc knows what he's going to get from.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what happens to this deadline, because you would think the Clippers make a move. It really seems like they're going to do something, but with the case with the Clippers, you don't really know what they're going to do. I mean, 2 years ago, they traded Blake. Last year, they traded Tobias. It seems like whatever they do, people won't know what's about to happen. And so all these people that are spreading rumors, whether it's a guy like Woj who says something, and then it's a guy like Mark Stein that says something else. And it really seems like no one truly knows what this team is going to do. And on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being not likely and 10 being very likely, what do you consider the Clippers' chances of making a move that is not just for somebody random, let's say like a Jordan Clarkson, for example? That wouldn't be a big move. Where do you consider 1 to 10 and it being a pretty decent-sized move?
I don't think a big move would be in the offing. I do think that they'll make some kind of move. I think that, you know, something that was described to me recently was that, you know, it might not even, you know, maybe it's someone who is, you know, a guy who comes off the bench. I think it's a sign if they do go down that route, and maybe it's not what would be considered a big time move. It's because it's a sign that they're very comfortable with the roster they have, you know. The Blake and Tobias moves were about getting the team in position to build around two superstars, and they got those two superstars, and now every move they make afterward kind of has to be about incremental improvement and almost like matchup based. You know, if we play this team, you know, what skill set we would need to survive a matchup such as this. So I don't think that a big move is needed, frankly, but they do have areas of improvement they need to figure out, and so the nice thing for them is I know they traded away a lot of their future assets, obviously in the trade to Paul to get to Paul George from Oklahoma City. But like we've talked about, they do have some stuff right now, whether it is Harrell, whether it is Mo Harkless's contract, and he holds value just in his own skill set, whether it is the 2020 first-round draft pick, they have some avenues to make some moves. The cupboard is not completely barren.
What are those assets? So those are the three assets probably that are the most tasty. I would say the tastiest for other teams would be that first-round pick, Harkless, and Trez. Those are probably the top three, you would assume. Where does Magruder rank on that list? Is that something where his contract makes sense for other teams?
I think that he, yeah, I think those three that I listed are definitely the three most probably appetizing, to follow the tasty analogy. I think they're the most appetizing assets that they have. I think Magruder is someone that, you know, holds value. He can play pretty good defense at times, but I don't think that, I think that in his case, he would, he, you know, specifically Magruder, maybe more like a salary filler if to get to a bigger number if you can't do it just with Harkless's deal. But they like Magruder too, so I don't sense that they want to part with him.
Here's a question that I just thought of. If you are not going to be comfortable playing Zoo at the end of games, and you like what he brings you in the first quarter and a little bit of the second quarter and some of the third, but it's really Trez that you trust at the end of games, wouldn't it make more sense to try and trade Zoo if you're not going to trust him at the end of the games?
Yeah, I brought this up recently to someone, and it was kind of knocked down, you know, because they do like Zoo, you know, and he's on a good contract. They really like his upside, and they feel like he's going to be an even better player. I mean, yesterday, Doc was talking about how he will be a three-point shooter very soon. He thinks that he can add that to his game pretty readily. I mean, it's part of his game right now. We see it during warm-ups, but in terms of adding it into a game setting, he thinks that can be accomplished. So you're looking at someone whose they think skill set will expand. So I don't think that they necessarily want to part with him. No. These are the Clippers. I mean, these guys, they will upgrade their team doing whatever it takes. So they're not sentimental in that way. But I really do think they like Zoo and feel like for the value they have on him, it makes sense to keep him.
Going backwards a little bit to the Lakers-Clippers game that was postponed, do we have any idea when that game is going to be rescheduled? Because I've seen some talk about it being in April, but if it goes with the April date that some are mentioning, I think it would cause a back-to-back for the Lakers. I had Justin Russo on last week, and he mentioned that the Wednesday before everyone comes back for the All-Star break would make sense because the Clippers don't play until Saturday and the Lakers don't play until Friday, and the game is on Sunday, so it still would give two more days after the game for everyone to get ready and play that Wednesday game where they have a day off. Do you have any idea when that game is going to be rescheduled?
I don't think that Wednesday would work. I think that the sense was from someone I talked with was that it was too soon. Like other teams wouldn't be coming back that quickly, so they felt it might be unfair. I don't think that, honestly, one proposal I had heard, and I don't know if this is even serious, but one idea I should say I heard was, you know, maybe they almost play it the day after the regular season ends. You know, maybe played April 16th. Actually, let me check myself. The Lakers might end on a back-to-back. Mm-hmm. So that might not even be viable. I've heard that it might be very, very difficult. It seems kind of odd, right? Like, well, this is two teams in the same town. How hard can it be? There are some gaps in the schedule. But obviously, they share the facility with the Kings. There are other events happening at Staples Center all the time. So it's not like there are just vacant days at the arena where they have to turn the lights on and host a basketball game. That's a big thing that, you know, after the All-Star break, I want to say maybe like a Thursday. Maybe that was a chance I brought up, but you know, there's someone, I think the Kings are playing that night. So it's, I don't see an easy date. I don't have any idea how close they are to finalizing that either, but I don't think it's as easy to make up the game as people probably expected when it was postponed.
Yeah, and that's the reason why everyone's freaking out the day, obviously, of Sunday, saying, why aren't these games canceled? It's very tough to try and get a game to be rescheduled, and the Clippers would have had to go back to Florida, which is really unfair to them because of how long that flight is, and it just would be out of the way. This is not like baseball where you can go ahead and schedule a doubleheader and things would be fine. I mean, this is completely different, and you bring up a good point. I mean, everyone forgets that the Kings are also in that facility, so you can't really just say, you know what, let's have another game, let's schedule it any time, because you can't do that. And then also, I think it's quite unfair that if you do schedule it on a back-to-back, then you know that immediately Kawhi is not going to play in one of those games. So now you've actually hurt the Clippers in this scenario, because if you schedule a back-to-back for the Clippers, you take out Kawhi for one of those games, and let's say that seeding comes down to maybe a half a game, then look what happened. I mean, that game could be the difference. So this is really a tough situation that the NBA is in, because this game may be pretty important for the Clippers. It may not be important for the Lakers, But for the Lakers, they play their guys in back-to-backs. The Clippers don't with Kawhi. And I don't know what the NBA is going to do. This really seems like a tough situation.
The idea for would they play it after the regular season ends, the only reason why that was brought up by someone was almost like a, if the seeding matters,
right?
Would they make it up then? And if it didn't matter, then would they almost just say, you know what, we're just going to end up canceling that game? Again, that's not like a serious thing. I don't think the NBA is considering right now, but it was an idea that was brought up that kind of made a little bit of sense to me, just because the difficulty of getting the game on the schedule, it appears. It's like, would they almost have a contingency plan? Like, well, if it truly would make a difference in seeding, yes, we will hold it. But if not, do you just kind of have an odd 81-game schedule? I don't know.
That seems logical, Andrew. It really does. I mean, A, because you have the whole 81 thing, so it means the Lakers will play 81 games on the year that Kobe passes away. And to your point, if the game doesn't matter, then there's no reason to play it. And if the game does matter, the NBA takes so many damn days off during the playoffs that they could easily have the game. I think the season usually ends on a Wednesday. So let's say the season ends on a Wednesday. Let's say you play that game on Friday. Then the next game could either be Sunday or Monday. And if you decide to do Monday, because normally it's on Sunday, then you just happen to have one day off between games instead of having two games off between games. It's not as big of a deal. And I think it would make sense to have that game be on a Friday. And the ratings for that game would be pretty big, you would assume, if you need to play that game. Because if it doesn't need to be played, then it doesn't need to be played. And so, obviously, it doesn't matter. But if it does need to be played, that means it matters. And the game is by itself on a Friday. I mean, that could be pretty good for the NBA.
Yeah, it's I know, obviously, the playoffs usually start pretty promptly, you know, Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
So there's not a lot of windows there. And I think that you'd probably get some pushback from the Clippers or the Lakers about, well, hey, you know, are you putting us in a compromised position with our first-round playoff series by making this play so soon before? I could see that argument being raised. Again, it just adds another layer to why it's not an easy thing to make up these dates.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't know what they're going to do. Talking about the Clippers' overall play, how do you think they're playing right now? Because they've won now two in a row with Kawhi and PG, and they're now 3-0, I believe it is, when they have their team completely healthy. And their record's pretty strong when Kawhi and PG are on the floor. How do you think they're playing?
You know, last night I didn't think they played all that well. They kind of sleepwalked through the first half. Defensive intensity was not great. They lost a lot of shooters on the three-point line, which is what they did against Sacramento last Thursday. They were better in the day game against the T-Wolves, like guarding the perimeter. But you saw some of those things where they just kind of lost guys. And Kawhi said they felt like the defensive intensity was not there. So I think you're still seeing these bouts of inconsistency, this up and down, that I think the teams that have played together more would probably have worked through by this point. But I think that Doc mentioned this, he alluded to this in his pregame availability with reporters, that in terms of continuity, there's a lot of times when it kind of, as he, in his words, kind of freaks them out, you know, because they haven't had much continuity. And then he thinks to himself, well, we have 30 games to go, roughly. And as long as we kind of get our time in then, I think we're going to be okay. And I think to his point, you almost have to look at last year for why he would feel that way. Remember last year, the whole team got upended at the trade deadline, and they were okay. You know, they made it out okay. Those last month and a half, or 2 months, I should say, was really important for them. And they ended up the playoffs on a roll. So I think that he's almost like, you know, obviously you would want as a coach to feel more settled with your lineup at this point. And yet, as long as you're rolling by mid-April, I think that he's going to be okay with that. So I don't think they're playing up to their potential right now. Doc certainly doesn't think that way either. They have a lot of questions left to go. But I think that the only thing that really matters with this team is how they look when PG and Kawhi play together, assuming they will both be healthy in the playoffs. And there are some moments, like in that third quarter last night, when you got a sense that, okay, they actually want this game. They want to win this game. And they pretty much took the game by the horns and won it. And so I think that's an encouraging thing, that although you don't want to be a flip-switch team, this team, you know, they can do it.
Yeah, we've seen them play down to their opponent time and time and time and time and time again this season. I mean, it just seems like whether it's Atlanta or it's a team like Sacramento, they really do play down to their opponent. And when they play against good teams, that's when their best comes out. And I think the most important thing is, Andrew, is that you need Kawhi and PG to be on the floor. Because if they're not on the floor and you're trying to incorporate them in and out through the next 3 months, then you're going to be in some, you're going to be in bad shape. I mean, you need to have them on the floor. You need to get that continuity, like you said. And it doesn't really matter as much the pieces around them. You need to make sure those two guys are on the floor. And if those two are healthy, and then you put them with guys that can shoot like Shamit, Pat Beverly's making a ton of corner threes recently, and you add them with the other guys on the floor like Lou and Trez and Zoo, it really feels like they're going to be fine. But the key, and as obvious as this is to say, it really does seem like it's the health of PG and Kawhi and those guys being on the floor.
And the last two games, I think, have been reminders that even when they are at full strength, it's a really, you know, health is a fragile thing with this team. You can't just assume that everyone's going to be healthy in mid-April. You know, Paul George got poked in the eye by Robert Covington on Saturday, came back, played great, had some huge moments that helped them win that game going away. Then obviously last night, you know, hit in the nose violently by DeMar DeRozan, inadvertently, but he goes out and everyone thought it was broken. He thought it was probably broken. Lou Williams thought it was broken based on how much blood was coming out. That's what he said. He called Paul George a tough cat. And you just have to realize that you can't take this team's health for granted that, oh, you know, by April, it'll be fine. You know, Kawhi has definitely gotten healthier. He has said he feels much better than he did in October. But the rest of the team is, even with Kawhi, you just can't make that assumption that they're all going to be fine. And every piece is going to be firing at the same time in mid-April. And that's the scary thing, I think, is that even, again, when they are at this full strength and people kind of take a sigh of relief of, okay, the game against San Antonio is their third fully healthy game this year, you get a knock. You know, Paul George gets elbowed. Weird things can happen. And, you know, when they aren't fully healthy, you definitely see the cracks of the armor. So it's a weird team. I mean, every team deals with health, and this team is deep enough right now. Who knows what happens at the deadline to absorb some of that. But I still think we can't quite just go on assuming this team is going to be fully healthy by April. You just weird stuff happens.
Yeah, it's a good point because everyone's like, oh, they'll be fine. I mean, have Kawhi sit out as long as he needs, sit down those back-to-backs, have PG sit until that hamstring's healthy. And then you think, well, all it takes is one more ankle tweak or one more hamstring tweak, and one of those guys is right back on the sidelines. And sure, you keep saying they're going to be there, that they'll be fine once April comes, but you don't know if they're going to be healthy once April comes. And that's the reason why you're seeing guys like Trez be floated in trade rumors, because you need to have that backup plan just in case it is only one of them healthy. That's the problem. And it really is going to be interesting to see what the Clippers do over these next couple days. What does your schedule look like the next couple days? Because I imagine it's going to be pretty crazy where you have probably Woj's alerts are sent straight to your phone. I'd imagine that your life isn't really the same these next couple days as it usually is.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, the start of free agency in terms of you're just always on and you're always trying to talk to people, as many people as you can, and stay plugged in. And that's kind of the way it is. You're just tethered to your phone. But obviously we went through this in free agency, and it's kind of a hyper alert time of the year. And it's kind of fun in that way. You know, it's like it's stressful, but this team is really fascinating, and they operate in the dark so much that it really does keep you on your toes.
And where can everybody follow your stuff, your Twitter, and where can everyone find your reading as well, or your writing?
Yeah, I would say obviously subscribe to the LA Times. That'd be the best way. But latimes.com/sports, and my Twitter handle is @AndrewGreif, G-R-E-I-F.
Andrew, appreciate your time, and enjoy the trade deadline.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Andrew, a little glimpse into the trade deadline, what the Clippers may or may not do, and a little general talk about the team as well. What is coming up for the Los Angeles Clippers? Wednesday, at home against Miami. That is tomorrow. That game is at night, 7 o'clock, by the way. If you are going to that game is no longer at 7:30. It's at 7 o'clock on ESPN, so that's something to keep in the back of your head if you're going to that game. Saturday at Minnesota, Sunday at Cleveland. I expect Kawhi to sit in one of those two games. Most likely that game on Sunday at Cleveland. It gives them an extra day before that Tuesday game at Philadelphia. It's a four-game road trip, Minnesota, Cleveland, Philadelphia, and Boston. As of now, we are scheduled to have Jovan Buha of The Athletic on Saturday morning to record a podcast. We will break down the trade deadline. What trades did the Clippers make? What trades did the Clippers not make? And what does the team look like going forward? You can always follow me on Twitter at BDMarcus. That's B as in Brandon, D as in David, Marcus at HoopBallClips is the Twitter handle as well. Big thank you to everybody that listens. Go ahead, and if you have 3 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, go and give us a 5-star rating and leave a review as well. It does help the podcast a lot. Big thank you to everybody for listening. We'll talk to you on Saturday if all things go well with Jovan in Minnesota. I'm Brandon Marcus saying so long. Have a great rest of your week and go Clips.
This has been a HoopBall presentation.